to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Susan, and hi to everybody out in Radio Land.
Since Sunday is Mother's Day, we thought we'd dedicate this program to thinking about our mothers and what the holiday means to us.
Well, as with most holidays, many people have mixed feelings about the day. Some people have regrets, some have sorrows, some find it joyful. We'll try to touch on the whole range of feelings, as well as tell the surprising story of the history of Mother's Day.
Usually, at this time in Local Talk, we have a phenology report, making us aware of the events in the natural world that are occurring. At this time of year, it's pretty obvious that birds are singing their mating calls and making nests. It becomes especially exciting because even those living in town can see these wonders in their yards, on their way to work, or, in the story I will tell you, on a neighbor's front porch. When I was coming out of Nancy Dobson's front door yesterday, I noticed grasses and a bit of crocheted string inside the ring where the recessed light would have been in her porch. And she explained that in the past month, house finches, the ones with the purple heads, had pecked away at the glass of the bulb and managed to pull out the springs that had held the canister with the light in, so that now there is a place for their nest. "Of course there's nothing I can do about it," she said. "Their eggs have hatched, and they have babies."
Happy house finch mamas. So where do we start with the people?
I think a good place to begin would be a letter that appeared in Huffington Post, written by Leah Grover. "Dear Less Than Perfect Mom," read by Laurie Allen, a storyteller who may be known to some of you from Porch Stories.
Dear Mom, I've seen you around. I've seen you screaming at your kids in public. I've seen you ignoring them at the playground. I've seen you unshowered and wearing last night's pajama pants at the preschool drop-off. I've seen you begging your children, bribing them, threatening them. I've seen you shouting back and forth while you're with your husband, your mom, and with the police officer at the crosswalk. I've seen you running around with your kids, getting dirty, and occasionally swearing audibly when you bang your knee. I've seen you sharing a milkshake with a manic four-year-old. I've seen you wiping your kids' boogers with your bare palm and then smearing it on the back of your jeans. I've seen you carry your toddler flopped over the crook of your arm while you're chasing a runaway ball. I've also seen you gritting your teeth while your kid screamed at you for making him practice piano or soccer or basket weaving or whatever it was. I've seen you close your eyes and breathe slowly after finding a gallon of milk dumped in the trunk of your car. I've seen you crying into the sink while you desperately scrub crayon off your best designer purse. And I've seen you pacing in front of your house. I've seen you in the hospital waiting room. I've seen you at the pharmacy counter. I've seen you looking tired and frightened. I've seen a lot of you, actually, every single day. I don't know if you plan to be a parent or not, if you always knew from your earliest years that you wanted to bring children into the world, to tend to them, or if motherhood was thrust upon you unexpectedly. I don't know if it meets your expectations, or if you spent the first few days as a mom terrified that you would never feel what you imagined motherly love would feel like for your child. I don't know if you struggled with infertility, or with pregnancy loss, or with a traumatic birth. I don't know if you created your child with your body, or created your family by welcoming your child into it, but I know a lot about you. I know you didn't get everything you wanted. I know that you got a wealth of things you never wanted until they were in front of you. And I know you don't believe that you're doing your best, that you think you can do better. I know you're doing better than you think. I know that when you look at your child, your children, you see yourself. And I know that you don't, You see a stranger who can't understand why the small details of childhood that were so important to you are a bother to this small person who resembles you. I know that you want to throw the lamp at your teenager's head sometimes, and I know that you want to toss your three-year-old out of the window once in a while. I know that some nights when it's finally quiet, you curl up in bed and cry. I know that sometimes you don't, even though you wanted to. I know that some days are so hard, all you want is for them to end. And then at bedtime, your children hug you and kiss you and tell you how much they love you and want to be like you. You wish the day would last forever, but it never does. The day always ends, and the next day begins new challenges, fevers, heartbreaks, art projects, new friends, new pets, new fights. And every day you do what you need to do. You take care of things because that's your job. You go to work, or you fill up the crock pot, or you climb into the garden, or strap the baby to your back and run the vacuum cleaner. You drop everything you're doing to moderate an argument over whose turn it is to use a specifically colored marker, or to kiss a boo-boo, or to have a conversation about what kind of lipstick Pinocchio's mother wears. I know you have tickle fights in blanket forts, and you have words to at least 8 different picture books memorized. I've heard that you dance like a wild woman when it's just you and them, that you have no shame about belching or passing gas in their presence, and that you make up goofy songs about peas and potatoes and cheese. I know that at an hour past bedtime, you drop what you're doing and trim the fingernail that your 3-year-old insists is keeping her up. I know that you stop cleaning dishes because your kids insist you join their tea party. I know you fed your kids PB&J sandwiches 4 straight days when you had the flu. And I know that you eat leftover crusts over the sink while your kids are watching Super Why. I know you didn't expect most of this. I know you didn't anticipate loving somebody so intensely, or loathing your post-baby body so much, or being so tired, or being the mom you've turned out to be. You thought you had it figured out, or you were blind and terrified. You hired the perfect nanny, or you quit your job and learned to assemble flat-packed baby furniture. You get confused by the conflict of feeling like nothing has changed since you were free and unfettered by children, and looking back on the choices you made as though an imposter was wearing your skin. You're not a perfect mom. No matter how hard you try, no matter what you do, you will never be a perfect mom. And maybe that haunts you, or maybe you've made peace with it, or maybe it was never a problem to begin with. No matter how much you do, there is always more. No matter how little you do, when the day is over, your children are still loved. They still smile at you, believing that you have magical powers to fix almost anything. No matter what happened at work, at school, or in playgroup, you still have done everything in your power to ensure that the next morning will dawn and your children will be as happy, healthy, and wise as could possibly be hoped. There's an old Yiddish saying, there is one perfect child in the world, and every mother has it. Unfortunately, there are no perfect parents. Your kids will grow up determined to be different than you. They will grow up certain that they won't make their kids take piano lessons, or they'll be more lenient or more strict, or have more kids or fewer or none at all. No matter how far from perfect you are better than you think. Someday your kids will be running around like crazy people at synagogue and concuss themselves on a handrail, and somebody will still walk up to you and tell you what a beautiful family you have. You'll be at the park, your kids will be covered with mud and jam up to the elbows, smearing your car with that sugary cement, and a pregnant lady will stop and smile at you wistfully. No matter how many doubts you might have, you never need doubt this one thing. You are not perfect. And that's good. because really, neither is your child. And that means nobody can care for them the way you can. With the wealth of your understanding, your experience, nobody knows what your child's squall means or what their joke means or why they are crying better than you do. And since no mother is perfect, chances are you are caught in a 2 billion way tie for best mom in the world. Congratulations, best mom in the world. You're not perfect. You are as good as anybody can get. With love, Leah.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we're talking about the various ways to look at Mother's Day. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and I, Tom Beal.
We have gathered several stories from memories of our mothers, and these are all from people who are associated with KHOI. And we have with us in our studio Ron Latson, who may be known to some of you for his program Soulful Express. But here he is with us in the daytime. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you doing?
What do you have to tell us about your mother?
Let's see. My mother, well, grew up on the south side of Chicago. And the thing that about my mother is I remember is her being stern and just determined. And she was a great role model because I didn't know my father. So my mother was basically mother and father for me.
And what did that mean?
That meant that, like I say, she was the matriarch of the family, but she instilled in me a lot of great positive things, and it kind of paid off into my life now of being a single dad raising two girls. So, you know, my mother was a very, very, very great teacher of life. You know, she taught me about life. She was very positive. You know, she's the one that if I needed anything or, you know, I'm a mama's boy. So I would be the first to admit that, you know, when anything goes wrong, I'm running to mama. Mama, what's going on here? What's going on here? So, yeah, she taught me about life. She taught
Ron,
me
you're
how to
a
make
professional
it.
Chef as well as a radio personality. Did your mother teach you how to cook?
Oh, yes, Tom. Like I say, my mother taught me how to cook. My mother came up with one phrase. She's like, as long as you know how to cook, you will always have a job. She's like, you can get a job anywhere. And, you know, my mother, the thing that I remember most about my mother and cooking, my mother used to be a postal worker, and she worked the early morning to, like, mid-afternoon shift. So when she came home at the age of, like, 8 or 9, I was cooking, like, full meals. I mean, like, pot roast, mashed potatoes and gravy, potato salad. So when my mother came home, she came home to a complete meal. So, you know, that's the one thing I can say that my mother really taught me about cooking was I wanted to make sure that when she came home from a hard day's work, she, you know, she could rest and she could eat. So, yeah, I thank my mother for that right there.
Well, there's another beautiful thing about that. You know, now there are a lot of families who don't eat together. Maybe that's stressful for you, though, when you work at a restaurant. Are you able now to have family meals?
Oh, yes. Well, so I can say between me and my daughters, we definitely have family meals. Because even though I'm a cook at a restaurant, like I said, when I go home, they expect to eat, you know, and it's the sit around the table type eating. You know, I come home and cook, and we all just sit around as a family, and we talk about, you know, how their day went and what was going on, and just the little things about their lives, because I want to know what, you know, went on in their day. And that's another thing that my mother instilled in me, you know, she instilled in me about family. You know, regardless of who you are or what you are or what you do, family is very important to me, and that's what I try to teach my daughters. It's what my mother taught me is that, you know, you're a family. You know, regardless of who you are, you know, you have your family to lean on. So, yeah, you know, that's another thing my mother taught me.
Were your daughters able to know your mom?
Oh, yes. Then they definitely know Grandma. Like I said, we're here in Ames, Iowa. My mother's back in Chicago. But every, I'd say, 3 or 4 months, we take a trip back to Chicago to visit family. And, you know, we visit my mother, you know.
Now, this is a dangerous question, but I feel compelled to ask. Do the girls say whose cooking they like best?
Oh, they definitely love my mother's food, believe me. Like I say, there is no cooking better than mom's cooking, though. You know, she gave me some of her recipes, but she's not given me all of them. So I'm still
trying
to finagle.
The secrets are still there, huh?
Oh, the secrets are definitely still there. Like I said, I'm a mama's boy at heart. Like I say, most men won't admit it. I'll be 52 years old, and yes, I am still a mama's boy.
Well, now the other question that I have is, what do your girls do for Mother's Day?
What my daughters do for Mother's Day, since I am a single parent, you know, we have our Mother's Day on Saturday. Well, we'll have it this Saturday because even though, like I said, I'm a single parent, their mother is still in their life. You know, the mother was away and she came back into their lives. So now, you know, they get the best of both parents. You know, I'll see them during the week and she'll have them on the weekends and days like that. So me and their mother, you know, we get along really great in raising our daughters, you know, so they're not just, I can't say I'm just a single parent because now we do the dual parenting thing. So they'll spend Mother's Day with me since I do that dual role, and they'll also spend Mother's Day Sunday, the actual day, with their mother in Nevada.
Well,
yeah.
That's a great story, Ron.
No, it's just life. I mean, I give a lot of thanks to the mothers out there for what they do and raising the kids and just teaching them. I think that's the best thing any mother can do is to be there to listen and also prepare your children for life because, you know, they're going to have to go out there. And if you instill the values that you were taught, your kids will be great. I mean, they'll make their mistakes. Oh, believe me, mine are 13 and 12 and... Yeah, I'm still going through that whole thing. But I'm trying to teach them the values that my mother taught me.
And that means you're teaching them how to cook?
Oh, yeah. My youngest one especially, believe me, I'll be cooking stuff and she'll be like, Dad, what are you cooking? I'm like, food. She's like, no. What are you cooking? I'm like, I'm cooking food. She's like, no, tell me exactly what you're cooking now. So she'll be right by the stove with me and she'll be looking like, okay, you added this to it, you added this to it. So now, a lot of times, like I said, with my schedule, I'm not there, you know, around dinner time, but they do have enough cooking skills that they can come home and, you know, make a grilled cheese or make some macaroni or make some spaghetti or, you know, things
but
like
you,
that.
But so. You don't come home to pot roast or anything like that.
Oh,
yet.
No. Believe me, I wish I did, but we haven't got to that advanced level yet, so.
Well, thanks a lot, Rod.
It's been my pleasure. Like I say, I love Mother's Day, and I love, like I say, what the mothers out there are doing today.
Well, you just heard from Ron Latson, who is a volunteer here at KHOI, and now we have three other people who are from our KHOI family, one by marriage, and I'll tell you about them. The first is Paul Wearson. The first is James Winters, our newest volunteer, who's also the engineer for this program. And he had a pretty unusual relationship with his mother that he'll tell us about. Paul Wearson from Story City is best known on KHOI as the county reporter with a great knowledge of central Iowa. And when you hear about his mother, you'll know where it came from. And the third is Kay Berger, whose story is more meaningful if you know that she is married to Roger Berger, whose opera program has been a weekly feature of KHOI since we went on the air.
And Roger also does morning masterpieces, and so you probably heard Roger during the broadcast week at KHOI.
I grew up in the post-feminist, post-industrial 70s and 80s. And my mom was a flame-throwing capitalist she-wolf. I remember that she agreed to be the troop leader for my Cub Scout troop, good old Troop 1047 in West Des Moines, Iowa. And I didn't realize it's the time, but it was kind of a stretch for her, and I really appreciate that now. And I remember we went to a state conference for Cub Scouts, and we went around the room and asked, you know, what's your name and where you're from? And hi, my name is James Winters. I moved my tie to the side and showed proudly that my navy blue Cub Scout shirt was scorched. And I said, my mom scorched my T-shirt. Anyway, thanks for not killing me, Mom. And thanks for letting me live through the post-feminist, post-industrial 70s and 80s. Happy Mother's Day.
Hi, it's Paul Wearson. I volunteer frequently at KHOI. I used to be an office dweller. I was an office manager for the state of Iowa, but also did radio for years in Des Moines. And I live on a farm in Story City, Iowa. Now I retired up here and left Des Moines. This is a farm my parents started farming on in 1930 with horses. And, of course, my mother was your typical farm wife of the 1940s and 50s in the times I remember. Washing clothes in the basement with an old-fashioned wringer and Maytag, and being in the band mothers and fundraisers, and she was a manager and leader of the quilting group at the church and part of Ladies' Aid, and all the things that happened when you were a farm mother in the 40s and 50s. And she was the kind of person everyone was attracted to. She consistently attracted people who were in trouble, who wanted to go to Celia Wearson for advice, comfort, and solace. And so we always had people here who were here to talk to Celia. And of course, in those days, I still have the trays stacked up in the kitchen cabinet here. You had to be ready to host anyone who stopped by because people came and visited Celia all the time. And she was, I suppose, a very well-loved person. I can't name anyone she ever had a conflict with. And she was a very supportive mother. There were four boys in the family. Three of us had college degrees, and one has a doctorate. So Mom and Dad made great sacrifices so we could proceed with our own lives and careers in a time where not a lot of people went to college from the farms. So they were a nurturing couple, and they never laid a hand on it. So I had a great fear that I would embarrass my parents. I never did anything wrong for that reason. She was the life of the party. She had a great wit. I think she was always a little frustrated that she didn't have a career, you know. I think she would have liked to have worked. But my aunt Elaine would come down from Minnesota. She was all the latest clothing and gadget and gizmos. She shopped at Dayton's in Minneapolis, and when she came down, they had all kinds of hijinks. There was a woman across the road, Cora, who lived in the farm across the road, and one day, she was kind of a little antsy about people coming to the farm unannounced, you know, and strangers. And when Elaine and Mom dressed up one day as painters and put mustaches on and knocked on her door, and it really terrified her. That was the kind of thing that Mom always did. And, you know, she was just fun. People were attracted to her. I was proud of her. People still today say great things about both my parents. They just had a great reputation in town and hardly any enemies that I could name. And Mom was probably the chemistry that made things go here at the farm. You know, she managed a house and did a great deal of the child rearing and encouraging, and she was always someone who nurtured us. And she would often come back from Ames on a shopping trip, and as soon as she opened the car door, she'd say, "Got something for you?" And it was always some toy or special thing that she had bought just along the way. And, of course, when you say she got something for you, she indeed had a lot for me. undying, unconditional love and support that I know from being in the world wasn't the great gift a lot of people had.
I just called to say I love you. I just called to say how much I care. I just called to say I love you. And I need it from the bottom of my heart.
Hey, I'm Kay Jackson Berger. And my mother was Ruth Jackson, and she had six kids, and we were kind of farm kids, and we had really a wonderful time. There are lots of very funny stories about my mother and my father and our family life, but I would like to talk about the one thing my mother had that was very, very, very special, and it isn't funny. She had a beautiful soprano voice, and we being farm kids, we were cowboys, and so we were every Saturday, all of us had to give the only radio in the house over to her on Saturday at noon, because that was when the Texaco Metropolitan Opera matinee was on, and it was about 2 to 2.5 hours, and so it became a kind of a ritual. She would listen intently, and she encouraged us to listen to opera. We were listening only to cowboy music and things like that. But she encouraged all of us to listen to this opera. And it was really a positive aspect in my life. I had a twin sister and a brother a year younger, and then we had three younger ones. So she taught us all about classical music and about opera. As I grew up, my husband-to-be, used to come over, and he was a great opera fan before we were married. And he came over and would listen to the opera with us. And my mother became very, very close in listening to classical music and opera. And I always say that he fell in love with my mother before he fell in love with me. I think in some ways that's true. I would be going out with other guys, and he would be sitting there talking to my mother. It was a really beautiful thing. Then we got married, and our interest really grew in the opera, and we've been married now 55 years, and we still belong to an opera group, Des Moines Metro Opera Guild. So that's really my story about my mother, who was just a wonderful woman and very easygoing, and she gave us all the love of opera.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we're talking about the various ways to look at Mother's Day. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and I, Tom Beal. So far, we've heard some interesting memories from James Winters, Paul Weirson, Ron Latson, and Kay Berger, and they all make us smile. But there are more serious aspects to the holiday, starting with the reason it first became a holiday, with Julia Ward Howe and Anna Jarvis, who wanted it to be celebrated in a very different way than we do. Then we'll deal with another troubling aspect of the holiday, the adopted children who yearn to know their birth mothers. This year, we can't talk about this weekend without mentioning that spring 2014 graduation at ISU, which is taking place on Mother's Day weekend. How many of those parents and grandparents attending the ceremony have a special pride in knowing that the young person receiving the diploma is the first in their family to do so?
That's a lot to cover. So let's get started with Julia Ward Howe and the first Mother's Day. This recording is of the Mother's Day message at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship last year, delivered by the Reverend Kent McCusick. I remember the history part from last year, but the personal revelations also fit into our subject.
The Mother's Day Proclamation, written by Julia Ward Howe, who also wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. She was distressed by the realities of war. After witnessing the human and economic devastation of the Civil War, she was deeply troubled when the Franco-Prussian War broke out in 1870. Her response was a proclamation calling women together across national lines to oppose war in all forms, to search for the things that connect us rather than divide us, and to make a commitment to seeking peaceful resolutions. She was a peaceful warrior. Now, her Mother's Day gatherings only took place for a few years in Boston, as long as she was able to foot the bill, and then they stopped. But she had been influenced by a woman named Anna Jarvis, an Appalachian woman who organized women's work days for women on both sides of the Civil War to improve sanitary conditions during wartime. 10 years later, after the Civil War, she worked to reconcile mothers and neighbors from both sides of the Union and the Confederacy. And while Ward's efforts to create a lasting recognition of women for peace were not successful, the daughter of Anna Jarvis, ironically, who was also named Anna Jarvis, continued her mother's crusade. Her mother was a Sunday school teacher, and as a 12-year-old girl in her mother's class, 12-year-old Anna quotes her mother as having said, "I hope and pray that someone sometime will found a memorial Mother's Day. There are many days for men, but none for mothers." So after her mother's death, Anna Jarvis initiated a massive letter-writing campaign to newspapers and politicians. And this resulted in the first Mother's Day in 1907 in West Virginia. This single day spread from West Virginia to 45 other states and was in 1914 declared a national holiday by President Woodrow Wilson. It was a holiday intended to celebrate women. Women who nurtured families, communities, countries, and the larger world. There was a tradition, because part of the tradition was for everyone to go to church and for all the mothers to receive white carnations. This is how they were honored, and it was a popular tradition. But a history of Mother's Day notes, while Jarvis had initially worked with the floral industry to help raise Mother's Day profile, by 1920, she had become disgusted with how the holiday had been commercialized. She outwardly denounced the transformation and urged people to stop buying Mother's Day flowers, cards, and candies. Jarvis eventually resorted to an open campaign against Mother's Day profiteers, speaking out against confectioners, florists, and even charities. She also launched countless lawsuits against the groups that used the name Mother's Day, eventually spending most of her personal wealth in legal fees. Sometime before her death in 1948, Anna Jarvis wrote, "What will you do to root charlatans, bandits, pirates, racketeers, kidnappers, and other termites that would undermine with their greed one of the finest, noblest, and truest movements and celebrations?" Strong words. And she was unable to stop the commercialization of Mother's Day to protect her intention to honor and celebrate women. I personally have a complex relationship with Mother's Day, and I'm one of the lucky ones. I had a wonderful and loving and mother and a healthy relationship with her. A typical Mother's Day with her was spending time together, choosing flowers for her summer garden and putting them in the ground if it wasn't frozen, or on the sun porch, which is usually where they ended up. We sometimes gathered with the family to share a meal which none of the mothers had to prepare or clean up after. Her name was Alice. She was a storyteller. We would sit for hours telling stories, usually laughing, sometimes crying tears of laughter, sometimes of loss. I think of her almost every day, even though she's been gone for more than 15 years. And I'm acutely aware of her absence on Mother's Day. But I'm also thankful remembering her presence.
The last part of Kent's reflection deals with his sister and her daughter and how they rediscovered each other after 50 years.
Yesterday, I signed into my Facebook account, and there was a favorite picture of my sister, a loving memorial posted by her daughter. And I was caught off guard, unprepared for a moment of grief, but that was eased and comforted by the image of her smile and the memory of her laugh. And it reminded me that it was just a few years ago that a woman who was about to turn 50 reached out to me by email searching for my sister. She thought that my sister was her birth mother and they had never met. And she wanted to thank her for giving the gift of life and let her know that she had experienced a good life. I didn't know what to do. This had been a family secret that none of us knew about for 50 years. So I talked it over with my sister's daughters because my sister was coming to the end of her life and I wasn't quite sure what to do. But we talked about it, and then my sister had the opportunity to meet her firstborn. And 50 years of guilt, shame, loss, and wondering were eased for my sister Sharon and brought closure to a difficult chapter of her life.
Lord,
Now it's time to talk about graduation, and I'm sure we all have wonderful memories of the days we graduated from school, various years. I do remember when my mother was sitting in the balcony at the big stadium in Seattle, where I graduated from the University of Washington many years ago. And sadly, my poor mother had an attack of some kind and had to go to the hospital, so she wasn't able to be there when I walked across the stage with thousands of other people to get my diploma that day.
Well, that really foreshadows a much sadder story that we have from Paul Lundy, and I'll play that next.
My mother's name was Edna Joy Searles, and she was born on April 18th of 1914, 100 years ago. She graduated from Sioux Falls, Washington High School in 1932 in a class of 665 and went on to Augustana College and majored in English, Latin, French, and journalism. She had a quadruple major. She taught school for all of her life after that, and she taught Latin, journalism, English, particularly English at the 11th and 12th grade levels. And in 1958, she was my Latin teacher because she was the only teacher in our school system that could teach Latin. In addition to being a great teacher, she was a fantastic mother. She had the ability to not allow motherhood to interfere with her professional status as a teacher and vice versa. Now, that had to be difficult. But the bad news is that she only lived to be 48 years old, and she did not live long enough to see me graduate from high school. But she had already laid the foundation so that no matter whether she was around or not, I would have a good foundation to go into the future. Not everybody can say that their mother is still mothering them after this many years. She had a long bout with cancer. She had breast cancer in 1956 and recovered from that pretty much, but she had way more radiation therapy than she needed to have, but they didn't know any better then. So about the time that I was a junior in high school, she was tested for a skin cancer in her neck, and that had been triggered by the radiation therapy from 5 years earlier. And then I had a sneaking suspicion, but back in those days, parents just didn't talk about that kind of stuff. They didn't want their kids to worry about things. So they wanted me to focus on graduating from high school and doing all the things that you do when you are a senior in high school. But this many years later, I probably miss her more now than I did at the time.
A story like Paul's is remindful of how important mothers are to us as we grow up and get ready to go off to school and begin our lives. And we want them to be there when we achieve certain levels of success. And getting a diploma is one of those symbols of progress, let's say, in our lives. So when our mothers can be there for that, it makes the day wonderful. And when they can't, of course, we have to always remember them for what they did to make our lives successful.
Yes, coming out of that story, I really wanted something that would carry on the seriousness, but with joy, and I found it in Mama's Song by Big Rob, the R&B singer, featuring Shirley Murdoch, released as a single.
You know what, y'all? I couldn't finish my CD without putting this song on here. But I don't know if it's so much a song as it is a testimony. You see, this is called Mama's Song. And this is dedicated to everybody out there who may be just like me. Your mama's gone on to be with Jesus. Now, if your mama's still living, I want you to do old Big Rob a favor. Give her flowers while she's still here, y'all. Cause when she's laying in that casket, you can do all the crying you want, but she ain't gonna be able to hear you. Now travel with me in your mind to back in the day, y'all. And it would be early on a Sunday morning while everybody else in the house was still asleep. Mama would be up with the chickens and with the sun coming up, y'all. And she'd be in that kitchen. She'd be frying bacon, scrambling eggs, cooking up some country ham, making homemade biscuits from scratch, y'all. And Mama always made a big old pot of grits. And then she'd be standing over top of that stove scurrying them grits. She'd just be laughing and talking and hollering out. And then she'd get to moaning. Yeah, she'd just get to moaning like this, y'all. And then when the Holy Spirit really got into her, she starts singing. She'd say something like this. She'd say,
Jesus.
Yes, Lord.
You've been good to me.
That's what she'd say, y'all.
You kept me from all hurt, harm, and danger. I want to thank you for waking me up this morning, for starting me on my way. Oh, Jesus,
Jesus, Jesus.
I love
I don't even think that Mama ate breakfast on most Sunday mornings. Like most mamas, they spend more time cooking for the family than they do actually enjoying the food that they cook. Because while we would be eating breakfast, Mama would be in the back getting on her favorite church dress, and she'd pull out that old hat box, pull out her favorite Sunday hat, y'all, spray a little of that perfume on herself. And Mama would rush out there and say, come on, y'all, we got to go. She'd look at my daddy, look at us, say, we got to go. We'd rush off and hop in that old station wagon with that wood paneling on the side. And while he's going down on the way to the church, my big brother be trying to help me fix my little clip-on tie. And then we would arrive at the church house. And the big kids, they'd go to Sunday school. But since I was the baby, Mama would take me up into the sanctuary with her. And she'd be so excited when Sister Shirley Murdoch was on the program.
Yeah.
And she'd just say, I hope she's gonna sing my favorite song. Mama's favorite song went like this.
Life is too short to be walking around mad at one another. Oh, you gotta appreciate one another. Appreciate one another while you have them. Cause one day,
one day,
you're gonna look around. You're gonna look around and they'll be gone. Oh, one day, as sure as you're born,
one day,
Mama, Daddy, Sister, Brother, maybe even your child won't even be here.
Give me my flowers while I'm still here. And I guess that's what this song is all about, just dedicated to all the mothers out there. Just saying, Mama, Grandmama, Auntie, Big Mama, my dear, we appreciate what you tried to show us. And it's amazing, ain't it, y'all? How sometimes you be over 25 or 30 years old and you think back to something you heard when you was a child that never made no sense to you. But now that you got children of your own and now that you're older, it makes all the sense in the world. I think that's all mama was trying to do is just look out for us, y'all. Listen, every time you get the opportunity to show your mama some love, make sure you do it, big baby. Because tomorrow's not promised for none of us. This has been a message from your boy, Big Rob. God bless you all.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today, we've been talking about the various ways to look at Mother's Day. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and I, Tom Beal. Many members of our KHOI family have participated as guests. James Winters, Paul Wearson, Kay Berger, Ron Latson, and Paul Lundy. Additional guests were
Lori Allen
and Kent McCusick. Greta Anderson contributed interviews and advice on music. Local Talk is engineered by James Winters.
Music you heard included Mama Song by Big Rob featuring Shirley Murdoch, released as a single, copyright 2011, Big Rob Music. Ave Maria by Maria Ferrante from Christmas in Worcester. I Just Called to Say I Love You by Ecker Bilk from the CD Mother's Day.
Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we produced since we went on the air in 2012. That's on our website. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There, you will find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses. Though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. Or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHO possible. Thank you for listening.
And we'll see you again on the radio.